ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, and men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Emily Power, the author of a book, How to Buy a Home from Debt to a Deposit. Emily Power is the Domain Group magazine's editor. She's a news journalist of 14 years' experience, including 8 years within the newsroom of Melbourne's Herald Sun and 3 seasons as a TV presenter with Network 10's morning show The Circle, and a twice-published author. Emily is the go-to real estate commentator for Melbourne's top-rating talkback radio station 3AW and a co-host of the station's Saturday Weekend Breakfast program. Emily, welcome to Dads on the Air.
Oh, thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me.
So, Emily, you have written this book on how to buy a home, and you've written it not as a real estate editor, but as a future first home buyer yourself. Who are you actually addressing the book to?
It's an interesting question that you asked first up. The first half of the book, I wear my would-be first home buyer cap, and then I put my property editor cap on for the second half, where I share insights into researching the market and valuations and building relationships with real estate agents. Those sorts of issues that I've been exposed to every day in my work. In the first half of the book and throughout, I'm really speaking to people who are looking for a first home, but not necessarily of Gen Y, but have perhaps been out of the market for a little while and are wanting some basics in order to feel confident when it comes to meeting with bank managers, understanding the market and reading business stories that refer to interest rate fluctuations and, you know, so-called property bubbles. Because I found in my experience that having a lack of confidence around these basics was something that had contributed to my financial illiteracy and also ultimately getting into the mire financially.
Well, if you regard yourself as having been financially illiterate, I don't know what it says for the rest of us who've...
Well, it is challenging, and you can be successful in many facets of life but still find finances to be something difficult to get your head around. It was an issue for me because I had very poor self-esteem. I was a fashion editor before I was a property editor, and over that time I was buying far too many bags and shoes in order to feel good about myself. And I got into that terrible situation whereby I would reward myself if I did something well with a purchase, and if something didn't go well, I would buy something to make myself feel better. I come from a close-knit family. I have a very good relationship with my dad, but I was so ashamed of being out of control with my finances that I hid from him and my mother the extent of my problems and situation. And when I came clean to them about my issues was the day my life changed for the better and my fortunes changed for the better.
And although you're writing it, obviously, as a young woman who finds herself in this situation, this would apply equally for young men, if not more so, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. Yeah. I've been careful to make sure that it can apply to nearly any generation, whether you are a young man or a young woman or an older person who has been out of the property market for a while and maybe is looking to sell a family home that's been in the family for decades and just needs a signpost through what is often a intimidating scenario to enter the property market. And I think as well with particularly young men perhaps who might be able to relate to my situation where I didn't feel that I could admit that I was struggling to understand finances. They could perhaps relate to some of the story in this book where I discuss how coming clean to those around me, admitting that I wasn't perfect and that I needed some expert help and some counsel, led me into a much better place. And I wrote the book to build confidence in people in order to do that, because as I've learned, when you don't speak about money issues and you are too proud to do so, that's when the rot and the problems can really set in, and it can affect your health and well-being when you're having financial difficulty, as I did experience.
Well, in Sydney and Melbourne particularly, the prices are through the roof and still going up. Do you think there is any hope for people trying to get into the market for the first time?
There is. There is hope. And I address that very topic in the precede to the book, where I talk about having a catch-up with an economist who is a contact of mine in journalism and asking him if there was any data that showed hope. Look, there's no such data that does show the hope, but from what I have seen as a property editor, if we are willing to compromise on location and size to accept a more European way of living, which means a more compact apartment, and to live more humbly than perhaps we might have dreamt of in second or third choice suburbs, then it is possible to get into the market, but it is difficult and it does require a lot of financial sacrifice in order to get there. And as this economist explained to me, it's not avocado brunches that people need to give up to afford to get into the housing market. It's life experiences like delaying marriage and children and holidays. Those enriching things that bring so much to our lives often get put on hold in order to accumulate that deposit. But I wrote the book because I do believe that it is possible to get into the market. And particularly now that the market is cooling, I think there is a window of opportunity for not just first home buyers, but buyers who've been watching prices sprint along faster than Usain Bolt and wondering how on earth they would ever be able to get in.
Yeah, you described a home as your most important asset, and I think some people picked you up on that, but do you still think so?
Look, I was careful in the book to say that buying property needs to be a decision made in conjunction with what else is happening in your life, and maybe that means that buying a property at the moment isn't the right financial decision for you, that seeing a financial planner and considering if it's right for you is a step that's important to take. I think I would be presumptuous to assume that for everybody, property ownership is the right financial move. But certainly I think for most of us still, that great Australian dream of the comfort and security of a roof over our head and to build that equity really is the most tried and true way to enter retirement with some comfort and some security. So I do encourage in the book ringing perhaps even national debt helplines and different aspects that can help you signpost you through to that point where you've cleared your debt and then you can look at the numbers and work out if property ownership is right for you. I obviously advocate that in the book, that it is, but I would encourage people to be looking at lots of different options as well, if that's right for them too.
And we're speaking today with Emily Power, the author of a new book called How to Buy a Home, From Debt to a Deposit. We might take a short break now, and we're going to listen to a song that describes a wonderful activity that I hope we all get to enjoy. It's called Looking Out My Back Door, and it's by Creedence Clearwater Revival.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
And that was Looking Out My Back Door by Creedence Clearwater Revival. And we're speaking today with Emily Power, who is the author of a new book called How to Buy a Home from Debt to a Deposit. So, Emily, as we were just talking about the importance of having a home in the world today, you've been saving since 2015. How's it going?
It's going very well, thanks, Bill. To be in a position where in spring I will be able to afford a deposit on a property, to me, is I'm very proud of myself. It's one of the most exciting things I've achieved in my life. I have my parents to thank for that, for their part in helping to re-educate me and guide me through to this stage. It will be a humble property. It will be possibly a shed at the back of Bourke, or the worst house in the worst street in the worst suburb, but it'll be mine, and I will have something that I can chip away at to create some equity. So I'm still doing the savings plan, but I'm tracking along to being in a position to seriously look in spring. And I have been asked, well, why did you write a book about how to buy a home when you are yet to buy a home? And my answer to that was, I've accumulated lots of knowledge as a property editor that I wanted to share. But also, I had come to understand that thinking about finances and getting your money in order and gaining financial literacy and confidence needs to come at the very genesis of wanting to save before you even put a dollar away in that long haul towards the property. And that encouraged the timing of the book. And I wanted readers to be able to follow me on the journey at the same time as I'm saving. And I've been really buoyed by readers contacting me over the last few days since the book's hit the shelves, to share their feedback and their story of their successes, their struggles, you know, where they're at financially and where they want to go. So I'm very pleased that I've timed the book in this way, because it means that I can help to create a community of people, not just of my own age, but anybody wanting to get into the property market, and I can go on the journey with them. And that's a unique position to be in when you're a property editor as well.
Yes, very close to your heart. But you described yourself as having a spending addiction, so congratulations on reaching this point. But how bad was your spending addiction?
Yeah, so in researching the book, I came to discover that shopping and spending addiction is not a recognised disorder in medical journals. However, I had the hallmarks of what I believe to be a shopping addiction. At its worst, I was in a situation where if I had $20 left in my wallet, I would find something to spend $20 on, something worth $20. I just couldn't let money sit in my account or in my wallet. It was tied to my self-esteem. It made me feel good to acquire something, and I'd lost self-control. And I wasn't raised in a family that was like that with money. My parents are very, very good at managing their money, and I grew up in a working-class suburb in Melbourne with a childhood that was very free of pris and pretense, with a mum and dad who were very active in every aspect of myself and my sister's lives. And so to find myself in this situation was unique to the way that my parents had raised me. And it is an issue that is close to my heart, because when I was at my worst, I needed to seek medical help for depression and anxiety related to how much I was spending. But even then, I struggled to be able to ask for that help, because I was embarrassed that I was overspending. And that really was the rock bottom moment from which I sprung up, because from needing to go to hospital and not being able to take myself inside the waiting room door through shame, I rang my parents and I went over and told them everything, which I should have done years ago. But from that moment, through family support and guidance, we were able to set me on a better path. It's been an act of tough love, and my dad does write a section of the opening chapter where he shares the how, what and why of his involvement in the pocket money savings plan and the management of that. And he does say that to intervene in his 30-something-year-old daughter's life when I was at my work and social prime was an act of tough love. But by having him closely involved, I have been able to turn a topic of anxiety, being money, into a healthy pastime. He and I talk about my savings, how are things going. We talk a couple of times a week about finances, either over the phone or over a glass of wine, and that is an extremely positive thing that has come out of the strategy as well.
And this strategy is that you've restricted yourself to pocket money. So
yes.
I suppose, in a way, it's another type of financial stress, except that, you know, something good is coming out of it rather than just a whole lot of stuff that you have to eventually get rid of.
Yeah. Well, I've had some people say, you know, I don't access my salary because it's in my parents' control. And they say, well, you're not showing any self-control, but I challenge them to live on $200 a week and see the self-control that it does take. And that's why I do think that my pocket money savings plan can retrain your brain to value and respect every dollar that you have and just how far it can stretch. And how it works is that my salary goes into a bank account in my parents' name, and I don't know the bank account details. I can't dip into it at a whim, and I don't have a debit card attached to it. And then usually my father will transfer $200 a week to me on my debit card, and I take it out as cash because I find that that helps me track my spending. And that $200 is for groceries, toiletries, petrol, parking, two coffees a week, and my entertainment. And it works. I've got a pool of money that's growing. My rent, because I live out of home, so my rent and utilities, mobile phone, car repayments, health insurance are direct debited from that salary pool. So it mostly sits idle, and my father and I touch base a couple of times a week to talk about money and to arrange the weekly transfer of that so-called pocket money. And I'm a happier person, and I'm really, really enjoying being on the savings plan. It does take sacrifice and discipline, but I have enjoyed the challenge, and I'm in the swing of very, very frugal habits now.
So if something arises, say you had a medical emergency, and I think you had had one previously, but say something arose now, you have to negotiate with the gatekeeper, being your father,
yes,
to release some funds, but that sort of helps you justify it rather than just, you know, grabbing it and thinking about it later, I suppose.
That's right. So I find that by prompting a conversation with my father, I can decide whether or not I really need to buy that item that is outside of the weekly $200 budget. And most of the time, I will decide that I don't need to buy it. And as an adjunct, if I need to have a doctor's appointment or buy a birthday present for my sister or a close friend, then I have to ask for that specific amount of money and it's transferred to me. And that means that I plan ahead and I think about what's coming up. And so instead of living week to week, hand to mouth, I'm having to plan and look ahead and think about my upcoming expenses and what I need to be able to tick off. That's a great thing from somebody who would spend and spend and spend without a single thought. What I can do is I can access an extra $150 within my budget on top of my $200 I live on without eating into my savings. So that does mean for a birthday present or something like that, I can't just go out and splurge and be silly. I have to also make sure that I am spending within a restricted basket, really, again. So it is highly, highly controlled, and I've become very good at planning, which is sensible for being able to handle the money in the future when I'm given control of the account.
Now, I know you don't track the day-to-day amount that's in your account. You don't even know how much is there, but as a rough guide, to get in that market in Melbourne and Sydney, I think probably fairly similar, what would you say you should be aiming at to eventually reach there for that deposit?
Yeah, great question. I have a ballpark figure, so I don't know to the dollar amount, but I know within very close striking distance of where I am at based on what I know my salary is, what I know my outgoing expenses are. So by spring, I will be able to afford a $40,000 deposit, which would be a 10% deposit on a $400,000 property. So it's a humble property that I will be buying, but I'm keen to get into the market at the end of the year if I can. Having said that, I'm very, very happy to continue to save into next year. If I don't find the right property, I'll just stay on the plan until the right property does come along. You really do need to be able to save somewhere in the realm of $40,000 to $60,000 as a single person to be able to get into the market with something humble in the high-value eastern states. I will buy on a 10% deposit and pay the lender's mortgage insurance, which applies if you have anything under a 20% deposit. So I will be socked a fee by the bank for not having a 20% deposit. However, it is possible to get a mortgage on even less than a 10% deposit. And in the book, I recommend some resources if you would like, if anyone would like to investigate the different types of loans and mortgages that are available, because it's not 20% is not the be all and end all. And, you know, we have to be honest with ourselves. 20% is an Everest to climb in a market like what we've experienced.
Well, in this book, How to Buy a Home, written by Emily Power, there are all sorts of other details. There are meal menus. There's some rough guides on what the various terms mean in mortgages, and some lawyers' terms. And there's a whole wealth of material. And there are also some contact details if you want to get in contact with Emily directly. So that's all in the book. We've reached the stage of the show, Emily, where we ask our guests if they'd like to pick a song. So would you like to tell us which one you've picked and why you picked
it? I'd love to. I'd love to request Money's Too Tight to Mention by Simply Red for very obvious reasons that could have been written about me and the way I'm living my life these days.
was Money's Too Tight to Mention by Simply Red. That was a special choice of our guest today, Emily Power. Don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, send us an email and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. So it just remains for me now to give a special thank you to our guest. Emily, thank you very much for being on the program.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. I've really enjoyed it, Bill. Thanks.
And we'll be back next week with another program on Dads on the Air.